Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Welcome to Vegas World. It's time to party. I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thank you all for tuning in. Flying solo this week, going to give you my reviews of Ballerina from the world of John Wick, Predator, Killer of Killers, as well as some movie news involving Henry Cavill, some Kevin Smith news, and some news about Dave Bautista. Before we dive into that, let's talk a little bit about what I've been up to these past couple of weeks. As you may have heard in a previous episode, I had a rib injury during a tag team title match, Tampa Bay Pro. It was me and Caden Green versus Unnatural Causes. My partner went to break up a pin with a seated senton, and when Clayton fell on his partner, Jeff Yeager, I heard a pop, and all the wind knocked out of me, and I had to roll out of the ring. Couldn't breathe. Was going to try and finish the match, but luckily for me and smartly, I decided not to, save myself for another time. Been x-rayed not too long ago, waiting to hear the results on that. Feeling pretty good. I may try and sneak in a workout, but, you know, I might wait. You know, I might be the right thing and just wait and for the all clear for sure from my doctor, because being healthy is important, because I would like to be back in the ring sooner rather than later. And hopefully, when I get back in, we won't have any more mishaps, because back in April, I got chopped in the throat, lost my voice. A couple months before that, had a bruised spine. So that was no fun. And, you know, some of it's the nature of the beast. It's professional wrestling. You know, it's not an easy gig. But the last one was more of it just a mishap, or it's something that happened rather than people being negligent in a manner of speaking. But we're not going to dive in deep into that. But can't wait to get back in the ring. Miss it a lot. I miss being in the gym. Oh, I can't tell you how much I miss being able to work out and, you know, lift weights. But, you know, health first before anything else. Other than that, I'd like to give a shout out to Mark Dacascos, who this past Thursday surprised me with a retweet of my advertisement for the review of Drive that me and Jackson did. That was a lot of fun. That podcast was a lot of fun. Took some doing because we went back to the old school format instead of a watch along. And, you know, Jackson, this is the first time Jackson did a review in that style, and he did pretty good. And it was awesome that Mark Dacascos acknowledged Vegas World for that. So I thank you, sir. And hopefully, maybe one day, possibly, fingers crossed, we could maybe possibly get an interview. I'll have to reach out to his people and see. But yeah, that was really cool. Really dope surprise, and reached a lot of new people. So if you are here because of Mark Dacascos' retweet, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you stick around and enjoy all that good fun. What else have I been to? I read Loki, the Mistress of Mischief. It takes place after Ragnarok. You know, Thor let it happen or stop. I can't remember exactly how he stopped it, essentially. And a lot of people from Asgardia, or people of Asgard, I can't speak. Words are hard, people. You would think, being the prolific pontificator that I am, that I would be better at this, but, you know, we're doing it live, pal, and ain't gonna bother with redoing that one. But anyway, the souls of people from Asgard have been transported in different bodies, and they're trying to start anew, and Loki comes back as a woman, claiming that they've changed their ways, but it's Loki. Have they really changed their ways, or is something afoot? That was a fun read. Also got my hands on Wolverine Deluxe Edition. It's a collected story by Chris Claremont and Frank Miller where Wolverine goes to Japan, and that is a lot of fun. I love me some Japanese aesthetic and Japanese stories, samurais and what all that, and it's Wolverine in Japan. It's always a good time and fun. I think it's also the basis for the Wolverine movie, if I'm not mistaken. But started to read a little bit of that. Also trying to get my way through Heat 2. Like, I read books pretty slowly. I need to get better about that, to be honest. I love reading books. It's just, you know, other things get in the way, or I've decided to, like, binge watch Buffy and Angel. I'm also on a Buffy Angel binge watch. I'm trying to watch it in chronological order right now. And I gotta say, I think I like Angel a lot more than I do Buffy, or at least season 4 of Buffy. Season 1, it took a little getting used to. I mean, you know, they're fighting their footing in that season, but, you know, it's always fun too when Eliza Dushku shows up, but she's not in season 4, at least for right now. But that's a lot of fun. I'm also, again, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I'm mentioning it here now, again. I've been watching Hercules and Xena the Warrior Princess in chronological order as well. Xena, I feel, is a light, tighter, and better written show than Hercules. Hercules is fun, you know, whatever you want to say about Kevin Sorbo, the man, and how whatever it is your identity politics are, or your politics in general, how you feel about that's neither here nor there. And that's, you know, my feelings on the whole thing is not neither here nor there. But it was just, it's a fun nostalgia trip, if I do say so. So that's been fun. What else has been up to? Yeah, been watching a lot of movies. Obviously, as I've said, you know, watch Ballerina and then Predator, Killer of Killers. But enough of all that preamble. Let's dive into it, shall we? Let's start talking about Ballerina from the world of John Wick. Directed by Lynn Wiseman, director of the Underworld series, Live Free to Die Hard, and the Total Recall remake. Did I say that right? Yeah. And he did, you know, he's part of Stargate. He was a property assistant. He was also, he did props for Godzilla, something like that. But he's been around, and this is one of his recent features. It was also written, if I can get my laptop to, go away. I'm having troubles with my laptop right here. This is funny. Live, pal. It's blocking the way. Shay Hatton, who's also written John Wick 3, Parabellum, Army of Dead, Army of Thieves, Rebel Moon 2. You know, do with that filmography what you will. It's, you know, he also he directed Day Shift. So that was starring Jamie Foxx. So that's pretty fun. But yes, this is another installment in the John Wick universe. And the first one not starring John Wick. And a lot of people, me included, was wondering how that was going to go because, you know, it was a Keanu Reeves vehicle. And now, while he is advertised, and I feel like they put him in there just to make sure that people who are fans of the John Wick series would come see this movie, it was going to be interesting to see how they handled him in a non-protagonist role and how much he would be in it. Would he be in there in a glorified cameo? And he was not. This movie takes place between John Wick Chapter 3 and Chapter 4. I don't know if I necessarily agree with the placement of that, given how this movie ends and his involvement. It just doesn't seem to make sense timeline-wise between 3 and 4, if I'm being honest, from what I remember. But at the same time, this is an action film. This isn't like some sort of prestige drama. I mean, you know, you should follow the lore and try to make sense out of everything. But this is a fun little romp. I mean, everyone in this world's an assassin, basically. So, you know, you should do with that with what you will. But this movie centers around Eve. Her name is Eve Morocco. She is the daughter of a man named Javier, who is a member of the Ruscaroma. And a woman who was a part of a cult, and her mother was killed because of Eve's escape, and the father sends men to try to kill Javier to get Eve back, you know. Javier is played also by Diego from the Umbrella Academy, David Castaneda. I can't pronounce it. I'm sorry, sir. You'd think I would like look up something to be able to pronounce it correctly, but I think that's correct. It's Spanish, and I'm just not very good with multi-syllable names. Sorry. But yeah, he was in it, and you know, he's proficient in action. If you've watched Umbrella Academy, and his fight scenes were pretty darn cool, you know? It was also interesting to see, because I heard the gripes from people, like, oh, it's going to be another girl boss who can take down big, burly men. But no, Eve was not that. Eve had to work for her kills and get through all her adversaries. I mean, her first mission from the Ruskaroma, she had rubber bullets. And, you know, the prime objective is to protect the client at all costs. And, you know, she had to work hard in that first mission to pass. Her initiation to get her first mission was also pretty interesting, too, because she had to assemble a gun pretty darn quickly in order to, you know, shoot the person from across from her. That person was Ryla Fukushima, who you may know from The Wolverine as Yukio, which is funny because I mentioned I, you know, was reading The Wolverine Deluxe story from him's time in Japan, so that's funny. She was also in Arrow as Tatsu Yamashiro, aka Katana. So that was a pretty neat little cameo appearance by her. Overall, the action scenes were, you know, just when I thought that, you know, they might tire out, because after all the installments and all the unique fights they've put on, how are you going to top what you did before and, you know, keep it engaging and not seem like we're treading water? We did not tread water in this. And this action team, or this stunt team, man, second to none. A lot of other movies a couple of years ago, or the last, since this movie, you know, since John Wick has come out, have tried to replicate that style of action, and they just don't do it as well as them. I'm sorry. They need to just hang it up. They need to just leave that to these guys. One of my favorite fights in this film involved a flamethrower from two individuals. So that's a lot of fun. That was wild and definitely unique. It was also pretty cool to see a group of people who don't necessarily follow the high table and adhere to their rules. You know, they don't give a cult the name as much as I remember. Like, you know, they're just off in the distant mountains of somewhere, you know, just want to be left alone. And you don't bother us, we won't bother you. The director of the Ruskaroma is very afraid of this group for the rules they don't abide by that everyone else does under the high table. You know, they don't even adhere to them. So, like, they're a scary bunch. Norman Reedus is Daniel Pine. He was a member of the cult. He's actually the son of the chancellor from the cult, and he tries to escape with his daughter, and, you know, the cult puts out a bounty on him, and, you know, you can't do business in the Continental, but, you know, some people try to break those rules. It was cool. I mean, he kind of felt like Daryl Dixon a little bit, and maybe it's just the hair, maybe he just came off the set of The Walking Dead or the Daryl Dixon show. I don't know, but he just kind of felt that way. But again, hey, you know, at this point, he might just be more of a personality than a character actor. And hey, that's no knock. You get your money, boo-boo. And, you know, you're a star. Yeah, star. And he was, you know, he was fine in this movie. It was nice to see Lance Reddick, who plays Sharon. You know, he's tragically passed away. He had a stomach cancer, I believe. He didn't really tell anybody, but he was a feature in this film. It's one of his last films he did before he passed away. Winston shows up, obviously, to, you know, guide Eve to the Ruskaroma, where she could have a family and grow up and mature. And, you know, she meets John Wick, and John Wick when this movie takes place, it takes place, I guess, at the beginning of 3, you know, when John Wick goes to punch his ticket and seek, you know, the guy off in the desert. But, you know, she goes to him and goes, hey, I want to be like you. And he's like, you don't want to be like me. But the first thing he says to her, she's like, how do I get out of here? And he's like, the front door is unlocked. You know, she's like, no, that's not what I mean. I want to be like you. And he's like, no, you don't. And when he comes back later, oh boy, she learns real quick why he is the Baba Yaga. That's for sure. But no, yeah, fun action, as always. It's nice to be back in this world in the non-John Wick protagonist role. And I am curious to see more of Ana de Armas in this John Wick universe as Eve. And the way they ended this movie, it's definitely sequel bait for sure. But if the movie doesn't make back what they feel is necessary in order to get a ballerina to, then hey, you know, it is what it is. But I think it's done pretty solid. It was a fun movie, and you should definitely check it out. And that way, because I feel like if this movie does well, then we will definitely for sure get that Kane spinoff. I know it's been in development, but you know, with these things, it could always change at a dime. You know, for all we know, like, this movie could do subpar, that we're just like, maybe a Donnie Yen movie where about Kane's just not going to work out for us. But I could be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. Yeah, that's my thoughts on that. I don't want to get too spoilery in it, because, you know, it's recently out. Maybe in a couple of months, I'll do a more in-depth review of it where I go blow by blow and, you know, give all the tidbits, spoiler style. But no, it was a fun movie. It was not a girl boss thing. And I know a lot of people, you know, that's one of the things they bag on in modern movies. And I'm sure they thought with her being the lead, it's they're pushing in a message, the agenda, you know, that tired bullshit. But no, not that at all. On the Dubetny scale, no, I'm not going to do the Dubetny scale, but it's a solid film. I recommend you definitely check it out, whether in the theaters or for streaming. You will not be disappointed. And you will not be disappointed in John Wick showing up. Because again, you know, everyone thought maybe he'd just be there for like a cameo appearance. Like, hey, John Wick's here. No, he's slightly bigger than that in this film. Moving on, though. Some Marvel news. Spider-Man, Brand New Day, has a new actor that's set to appear in the film. And that actor is Jon Bernthal. Yes, Frank Castle, the Punisher, will be showing up in Spider-Man, Brand New Day. That's going to be interesting. It's going to be the first time the Punisher will show up in a non-Daredevil-esque world. That'll be cool to see him interact with old Tom Holland, Peter Parker, Spider-Man. It'll be an interesting dynamic. That's for sure, given how dark he is and how, Peter's experienced some trauma himself, but he's more of a lighthearted individual, I think. Also, star of Stranger Things, Sadie Sink, is set to appear in the film. That'll be fun. I wonder what she's going to do. Is she going to be like, I know they have MJ, their version of MJ, and Zendaya, but will she be MJ? Could she be Gwen Stacy? I don't know. Doesn't appear to show what her role would be, but she's going to be in it as well. But it'll be cool to see Jon Bernthal in this film. So it's not spoilery, because, you know, obviously they big put it out there, but it's definitely fun to see some of the more Marvel Netflix people from the Defenders saga show up into this. To the true MCU proper, I shall say. Other than that, another news from the remake of Highlander, or the reboot of Highlander, you know, the 1986 cult classic film starring Christopher Lambert and Sean Connery, with the epic soundtrack from Queen. You know, Queen personally made a song for that film. But they have casted someone to, you know, the mentor character for Henry Cavill's Highlander to play Ramirez McLeod. McLeod is the Christopher Waltz, Henry Cavill character. Ramirez is going to be played by Russell Crowe. So that is going to be interesting, I think. Russell Crowe as Ramirez. I mean, Sean Connery is not exactly Spanish himself, but I want to know if Russell Crowe is going to put on some wild accent to play Ramirez. That'll be because, you know, he's done to do that. You know, God in Love and Thunder, he did a crazy accent. He's done crazier accents in other films. This film is also being helmed by Chris Stalitsky, I can't say his name. I should research these more, probably. But the people behind John Wick, John Stalitsky, he is at the helm of this film as, I guess, director, maybe producer, writer. and with the Henry Cavill as McCloud, that'll be interesting for sure. I just want to know who's going to be the Kurgan in this film, because they're going to have a tough act to follow in Clancy Brown. But yeah, that was an interesting choice, to Russell Crowe. Kevin Smith news, and no, it's not a sequel to Dogma, though that would be pretty darn cool. It's the 25th anniversary right now, I think, and that he was recently here in Tampa, Florida, to talk about Dogma, and I was sad that I couldn't go, but Bud Heavy went, and to that I say, screw you, Bud. Screw you. I'm kidding, he's a great guy. Love him to death, and I'm jealous that he got to go do that. But Kevin Smith will be teaming up with Andy Kubert for a Daredevil Green Arrow crossover. Marvel and DC will be doing a crossover event. Other titles, or other characters such as Deadpool and Batman will be crossing over, with Zeb Wells as the writer and Greg Capullo as the artist. There's going to be a backup story with Captain America and Wonder Woman. And Jeff the Land Shark and Crypto team up. Chip Zdarsky is going to be writing the Captain America Wonder Woman crossover. Jeff the Land Shark and Crypto will be Kelly Thompson and Goru Hiru. I probably butchered that name, but yeah, that guy's doing artwork for that story. But it's interesting. Kevin Smith will be doing the Daredevil Green Arrow crossover because he's written for the characters before. I know he had a pretty good run on Green Arrow. I read some of it back in the day. So I know he's no stranger to comic books, and he's a big comic book fan. I mean, he wrote Batman stories as well. I think he did a Daredevil. He did a Daredevil story as well. But it'll be fun to see him back at the helm of those stories. But another fun thing I saw in this article as well, that Deadpool and Batman are going to be crossing over, and Grant Morrison and Dan Mora. Grant Morrison will be doing the writing, and Dan Mora will be doing the artwork. That'll be a lot of fun and interesting. I don't know how well Batman will take to Deadpool's chicanery, but there's that. But I'm interested to see how the Kevin Smith story goes. Hopefully, it'll stay on deadline and not he won't be late. Because I know that was a problem with his Green Hornet series. That was actually pretty good, too. I read some of that as well, but it's always fun. Hopefully it'll be a lot better than some of his movies. I'm kidding. I like Kevin Smith. Jay and Silent Bob Reboot A was... it was left a lot to be desired. But nonetheless, that'll be fun to look out for. Another fun little side story. James Gunn is irritated with people being outraged over the Batman 2 delays. And he said, and I quote, "Get off of Matt Reeves' nuts. He doesn't owe you something because you like movies." And like his movie. You know, that's been the big thing. There's been rumors of delays, that Matt Reeves is leaving the Batman 2 and that there is no script. And, you know, Robert Pattinson joked, by the time we get to this next film, I'll be old Batman instead of young Batman. And, you know, James Gunn has spent a lot of time trying to, you know, debunk all the rumors and such and say, no, this movie is coming. Just be patient. No, it's not being canceled. And he's tired of answering those questions and said, it's coming when it's coming. They're getting a script sometime in June. James Gunn also has made it a point to say that a lot of other movies have taken a lot of time in between films. I mean, it took 6 years for his Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and 3. There was like 14 years between Alien and Aliens, 36 years between the Top Gun films, 14 years between the Incredibles films. So a good film will take time. And you know what? To that, I say, yeah, like, get Matt Reeves. Take all the fucking time in the world that you need. I want a quality film. I want a quality follow-up to The Batman. And I understand that The Batman is a tough act to follow because it was pretty much a true detective. So it was Seven meets Batman, if you want to get into like aesthetics. So that was cool. And, you know, to come up with a quality story, it's going to take some time. You know, we got The Penguin, so we got a little taste of what's to come in the world, and, you know, to be back in there to satisfy everyone's needs. So let's just give the man some time, for Christ's sake. Hell, I'm still waiting for a Cloverfield 2, and I don't think he's even going to be a part of that. So count your blessings, you cultured swine. And I don't know, man. But yeah, no, that's going to take some time. That's the news on that. Just he's stopped. James Gunn has said he's going to stop trying to like debunk every single rumor, and he's gotten off social media and just, you know, they're not going to start working on a story or production on a film until they have a complete script. And that's what's wrong with Hollywood today is they get into production without a script. So, you know, as a Batman fan and as someone who enjoyed the Batman, I would like a sequel sooner rather than later. But, you know, sometimes them's is the breaks. In a final bit of piece of news, I don't know if you heard this or not, but Guy Ritchie is on board to direct Roadhouse 2. And yes, there's going to be a Roadhouse 2. The first one was so-so, you know. I mean, Conor McGregor was Conor McGregoring it up, and Jake Gyllenhaal was entertaining. It was nothing to write home about, to be honest. I know everyone says it's not as good as the original, but even the original was pretty freaking preposterous and silly. You know, it was a goofy movie. It's just, I feel like maybe nostalgia has clouded people's minds when it comes to that sort of thing. You know, I mean, hell, the main villain in the original told Patrick Swayze that he used to fuck guys like him in prison. Like, what are we doing here, people? Like, come on, that's some wacky stuff. And this film was pretty preposterous and silly, but yeah, Guy Ritchie is going to be directing it. But that's not the piece of news that intrigues me the most. The news that intrigues me the most in all of this is that Dave Bautista, big old Dave, I walk the miles inside this pit of danger. Yeah, you know what? Roll with that. I am so goofy today. I don't know what I'm in. I don't know why I'm in such a goofy mood today, but I am in a pretty jovial, silly mood. But yeah, Dave Bautista is set to appear in Roadhouse 2. That could be interesting. You know, he's a pretty funny guy. He's been funny in Guardians of the Galaxy and other stuff I've seen him in. He's a quality actor. So, you know, it'll be fun to see him in Roadhouse 2. And now, finally, we get to the main event. Predator, Killer of Killers. It was directed by Dan Trachtenberg, who has pretty much become like the shepherd of the Predator franchise. You know, he's a guy who gets Predators and understands what fans want and expect from a Predators story. And for years, people were like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if there was a movie where, like, you know, Predators fight samurai and ninjas, you know, they're in Japan, feudal Japan. Or what if, you know, a Predator fights in World War II? What if a Predator fights a pirate and other wacky stuff? You know, all these what ifs, you know, drop a Predator in some historic piece of time and let them go at it. And this is pretty much that. This is serving you that. It's kind of plays like an anthology in a sense. Like there's three individual stories and there's a big epilogue at the end where it all ties together. So I don't know if it's fair to say it's a complete anthology in that regard, but we get three different characters. There's a short called The Shield, The Sword, and The Bullet. The Shield takes place in the year 841, Scandinavia, Viking era. A warrior named Ursa is looking to exact vengeance on a man who killed her father and destroy the Krivich tribe. I probably butchered that name as well. I'm bad with names, guys. I'm sorry. I should research this a lot better, but nonetheless, you know, before that story happens, we get a cool little opening where finally in a film, we acknowledge the Yautja name, because Yautja has appeared in comic books and novels from the Predator universe. This is the first time in a movie for the Predators we get acknowledgement that they are called Yautja, and it opens with a epigraph from the Yautja Codex, where it says, "Go forth among the stars and seek only the strongest prey. They shall be your trophy. Become Killer of Killers." And yeah, the first story, The Shield, sets her Ursa. She goes to find the man who killed her father and seeks vengeance on them. It was a really fun story. The Sword is set in 1609 Japan. Two brothers of a samurai warlord are made to do battle. One doesn't want to do it. The other wants to fulfill his father's wishes. And their story comes back years later after the father has passed. And they've been estranged. One of the brothers, you know, goes into, I guess, self-imposed exile. And he vows vengeance on his brother, you know, to get back at him for what happened. The Bullet takes place during World War II, I believe. Yeah, World War II, 1942, where we follow John J. Torres, who is drafted into the Navy as a gunman. You know, he's a fighter pilot and a mechanic. And his story is so-so, you know, Predator comes in a ship and attacks everybody. If I had to rank them, I would say The Sword is my top favorite story in the whole thing. The Shield second, and The Bullet is last. The Bullet just wasn't as engaging as the first two. The Sword, though, The Sword is really cool because there is hardly any dialogue. I mean, one's a ninja, so obviously he ain't going to speak, and he's going to be, you know, sneaking around the castle and such. But there's not a whole lot of dialogue in that particular story. So they all feel like different, unique tales and different approaches. Dan Trachtenberg was part of the story creation with Micho Robert Routier. Micho Robert also, I think he was co-writer and did most of the screen work for this, but you know, Dan Trachtenberg was shepherding the story because it's in his little shared universe he's creating there. But yeah, the sword is my favorite story, because again, I love martial arts. I love samurai movies. I love ninjas. That's, you know, I mean, it's all the good stuff. And having a Predator in that and seeing a ninja super vulnerable because all his tricks ain't going to work with a Predator who has, you know, heat vision and can see everything with their mask. That was pretty, pretty dope. Ursa's story is pretty strong. You know, it's a tale of revenge and trying to raise her son to be as like strong and cold as she is, and you know, having the trauma of watching her father die, or having her hand in it in a sense. I won't explain too much about that. You got to watch it yourself. But yeah, so that was a you know, decent story, and she gets her revenge, I guess, in a sense. Or does she, brother? But the Predators, just how they use the Predators, and how, like, that's what I liked about the first film. You know, Predator was about these, you know, military men going into deep in enemy territory on a lie, and their whole mission is way different. Like, the Predator just happens to be there, and then he becomes the problem. And so I love how, yeah, these stories aren't set around the Predator itself. The characters' goals are vastly different, and they just show up. And in one of the stories, I love how in one of them, like, the Predator's just chilling, like, oh, this looks interesting. I'm just going to kick back and watch, because this is very intriguing to me. I ain't going to do nothing just yet. I'm going to kick back and let them go at it, because this is, like, entertainment for me. That was pretty cool. The final bit in the epilogue, the King Predator, the Gerald King, I guess they got christened by the Viking lady. He looked pretty dope. His I don't even want to call it a robe or whatever. I mean, I guess it could be that, but what the way that was made out of, I guess, you know, predators, or not predator, alien spines. That was dope. That was the one little fun little Easter eggs tied in there, and I'm sure that'll tie in again with Badlands, because, you know, Predator and aliens have been intertwined in comic books and novels. They've had the two crossover movies that weren't very effective, but that was a little cool thing. The other cool little teaser we got at the end was also pretty dope. I'm not sure if I'm too keen on the idea of time travel, so to speak, with how they use it. I mean, they kind of tease a bigger scale event than what they did in Predators, where, like, they dropped people into a game preserve, basically, and they hunted them there. And these were, like, top elite, super elite fighters from all over the world and different backgrounds. Funny enough, too, I was going to mention this. I just remembered. The voice actor for Kenji and Kiyoshi from The Sword was played by Luis Ozawa, who was in Predators as, what's his name? I gotta go look real quick. I looked it up last night before I was gonna record this, and I have flat out forgot. Oh, Hanzo. Yeah, there he is. He was the character of Hanzo. He had a sword fight with a Predator in that film. That was fucking dope. One of the best parts of that film. You know, Predators wasn't bad per se, but like it wasn't great like Predator or Prey. But you know, we got a fun little teaser at the end of what could happen with these characters in future installments. We got a nod to the past in several ways. I'm not gonna spoil those for you. You can watch it and find out for yourselves. But those are really cool. As a Predator fan, those little nods and expansion of the overall world was really cool. I think Predators is back. You know, Dan Trachtenberg as the producer and writer or director and the guy, you know, behind the wheel, so to speak, of these projects. That needs to be him all the time. He knows what he's doing in that regard. And I clearly, it shows with all the details added into this film and in Prey, like you can tell this dude was a huge, huge Predator fan, and it shows in the work, and I'm loving it. I'm loving the direction of the franchise. I can't wait to see Badlands. I can't wait to see what happens with Prey 2 as well. But yeah, no, the anthology bit was really cool. I'm not so keen on the art. I know it's like supposed to like mimic Arcane and some other popular work. But it's just, I don't know. It took some getting used to. Like I got the first, when I first, in the sword, or not the sword, the shield, it was a little wonky to see at first, but I got used to it. You know, it looked really good in the sword. Again, I love the minimalist take with very little dialogue. You know, this film is a show, don't tell medium. And they did a lot of that through expression and just art, you know, and how they did the characters without having to blurt out words a whole hell of a lot. So that was pretty cool. It was a fun watch. You should definitely go out of your way to watch it. Watch it soon, because it definitely ties in, I think, to what's coming out soon. But yeah, another home run, man. I really enjoyed it. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I think that covers everything I wanted to talk about this week. We covered all the big bases. Coming up pretty soon, we're going to have me and Caden Green sit down. We're going to discuss the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Also a Slamisode where we watched That 70s Show with The Rock appearing. We'll be up at some point in the near future. We've also got a Henry Danger. I think it was Henry Danger. Chris Jericho was on a TV show. That Slamisode will be gracing the airwaves pretty soon as well. But a lot of fun stuff coming out the pike. Because, you know, we don't forget our 90s watch long pretty soon. The Funeral Party, well, The Funeral Party minus Chelsea Durden, will be watching Street Fighter, and possibly, maybe, presumably, we might have another guest along with us that day. You know, I don't know, but you just got to stick around and find out. And I thank you all for listening today. You can find me at the JC Vega on all social media platforms. You can find me on ProWrestlingTees.com. Buy yourself a t-shirt. Support the Vegas World podcast by getting a Vegas World t-shirt. Support me by buying a JC Vega t-shirt. One says punk rock, the other says rainbow dash. What's not to like on that? Variety. Have some variety in your life. Get rid of the black shirts, brother. Get some color in your life, or just some plain white. You know, hey, that is what it is. You can find the Vegas World Pod at Vegas World Pod on Instagram and Twitter. You can email us at VegasWorldPodcast@gmail.com with your questions, recommendations, compliments. Insults will be discarded. Duly noted, but discarded. I don't even know if it'll be noted. But nonetheless, reach us there. Good night. Party on.